Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. People who work out and eat healthily shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the concept behind Health IQ. They use data, science, and statistics to show insurance companies that health-conscious people deserve lower rates on their life insurance. This actually happened to me. After the birth of my first child, my husband and I decided we needed life insurance. It was a very pleasant surprise that my final quote was half the amount of the original quote because I was so healthy. 56% of Health IQ customers save 4 to 33% on their life insurance. Health IQ can save their customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are not active. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/YBB or mention the promo code YBB when you talk to the Health IQ agent. Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg, and I am your host for Yoga Birth Babies. And today we're going to talk about a situation that happens far more than people talk about, than people realize, and it might actually bring comfort. We're going to talk about miscarriage. So I have Dr. Michelle Kanarek here, and we're going to talk about that. Let me tell you a little bit about Michelle. Michelle Kanarek is a licensed clinical psychologist and mother of two young children. As a psychotherapist and a mother, she empathizes with the experience of building a family and provides individual and group therapy to mothers, children, and adolescents through her private practice, NYC Mom Support, on Manhattan's Upper West Side. Her approach is grounded in the concept of empathy and provides practical techniques to help individuals and families thrive. Dr. Kanarek has made multiple appearances on Good Morning America and speaks to parents with children of all ages on topics ranging from sleep training to setting limits on social media. Her other experiences include Bellevue Hospital, the Holloway Center, the JCC of Manhattan, and Ethical Cultural Fieldstone School. Hi, Michelle. Welcome.
Hi, Deb. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So the reason, for those that haven't been reading the blog, the reason I asked Michelle to come on talk about this is because she wrote a beautiful piece about her experience having a miscarriage. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that. I think it's a topic that many women face, but often don't feel they have the space to talk about it and often feel isolated. So let's just open this up and hear a little bit. So Michelle's just going to, if you don't mind, telling us a little bit about your personal experience.
Okay. So I've had actually two miscarriages. I also want to say that I have two children now, and my children are almost nine and seven. So my story goes back to about 11 to 10 years ago. And before I had my daughter, who's the older one, I had two miscarriages. Both of them were in the first trimester, the first of which I learned about actually at my 12-week sonogram appointment when I went to the hospital to have the sonogram and see the baby. And the second one I learned about earlier. So the first one, what happened for me was that somewhere between 8 and 12 weeks, somewhere around 9 or 10 weeks, the fetus stopped developing, and I didn't know about it because I had no symptoms. I didn't bleed. I didn't feel anything. And because I still had the hormones, I continued to feel what a person feels who's in their first trimester. I felt tired. I felt nauseous. And I actually continued to sort of gain weight, probably because I was eating more, but I continued to gain weight. So it was really shocking when I went to having had the 8-week appointment where I heard the heartbeat, going to the hospital and laying on the table. It was really shocking for me and really very sad. And really very sad. And I will tell you a little bit more about my experience as we move on around trying again and how I got there. But I ultimately did try again and I got pregnant again. And this time, around 7 or 8 weeks, right before my 8 week appointment, I started to feel different and I did start to bleed. And so I was able to identify it and I went straight to the doctor and learned at that moment that the fetus had stopped developing. So that's kind of the stories around the actual experience of my learning about the loss. Both of those times I had a DNC following the loss because of how far I had progressed and also because that was my choice. As soon as I learned that I didn't have viable pregnancies, I sort of had the experience of wanting it out of my body.
Did they give you another option than a DNC?
To be honest, I don't even remember. I know that the first time, no, because I had progressed so far that it seemed, I guess, at least to my doctor, that that was the best choice. The second time, I think I had just sort of said, let's do the DNC tomorrow. You know, I wanted it. I wanted to be done. I know that it is a choice, that women do have other choices. People elect to do, to take medication to sort of have it come out more naturally. For me, that felt more intrusive in a way and felt, it just wasn't what I wanted.
I do want to, if I can just interject one thing, just because I want our listeners to know, there are the options of the DNC, the medication. But when, as I mentioned before we started taping, I had a very similar experience to you, that at 8 weeks, we heard a heartbeat. At 12 weeks going back, no heartbeat. It's devastating. And my doctor is like, the next day, DNC, you'll go under, they'll do it. And I called my midwife and she said, there's another option, which is called a vacuum extraction. So I was completely awake for it. And then it's kind of suck it out. So I just wanted to make sure that as listeners are hearing that there are a few options. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt your story.
No, thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry to hear about your loss. So between the first and second miscarriages, as far as the medical world was concerned, I was sort of safe to proceed as normal, as usual, in terms of trying to get pregnant again and being pregnant again. After the second miscarriage, although many doctors will say you can actually have three before they will proceed to try to figure out what's going on, if there's something going on, I sort of said, I don't want to do that again. I want to see what's going on now. And my doctor was respectful of that. So after that, I started down the road of identifying if and what the problem was. And then I identified multiple problems and was able to get the care I needed in order to give me a better chance of having a successful pregnancy.
And you did.
And I did. And then I had, And then I had another successful pregnancy. So I've had two. So I did. So there is hope. And while you're experiencing the loss, you don't necessarily feel the hope. I know that for me was the hardest part, was how anxious I was around what would happen and not knowing the anxiety around the not knowing what was going to happen next, and the belief that, or the fear that I might not ever conceive and have a healthy pregnancy and ultimately have a child, was so strong that it was really hard for me to maintain any hope that it would work out for me.
Did, when you were going through this, did your care provider give you any perspective of how common this is?
Yeah, sure.
Do you remember that statistic?
So it's in the first pregnancy, in the first trimester, it's actually fairly common. 10 to 20% of known pregnancies end in miscarriage. And there's probably even more than that, because the likelihood of miscarriages increases in the is most pronounced in the early weeks. So many people will be pregnant and have a loss without even knowing it before they would have gotten their period. So it's 10 to 20% within the first 7 weeks. So it's pretty high. It drops to about 4 to 5% after 8 or 9 weeks. But in the first few weeks, it's pretty high.
Yeah, there's something else called a chemical pregnancy. I don't know if you've heard of that. I had that right after the miscarriage I had, where I guess the hormones interact and it looks like the fetus is forming, but it doesn't. And so that happens for a lot of women between 5 to 7 weeks, which someone could just think, oh, I'm a little late for my period, and not realize they actually had a chemical pregnancy.
Right.
And it shows up positive on a pregnancy test.
Right. And so for some people who, you know, who aren't trying to be pregnant, or who are sort of trying, but maybe in the early stages of trying, they might not recognize that they might not have tested, and they might not know. Mm-hmm. For those people who are, you know, dutifully trying and taking pregnancy tests after every 4 weeks, particularly if they're have struggled with conceiving, they will know that they have that chemical pregnancy. And many of those women, despite the fact that it really is just, you know, your hormones kind of playing a trick on you, essentially, will experience that as a loss.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's talk. So that's kind of the statistics of, you know, how often, how long. Well, we talked a little bit, but how long do you suggest, or how long have you heard somebody should wait before trying to conceive? What was your guideline that was given to you?
Right. So with the first, after a first miscarriage, and depending on what option you choose, your medical professional, your caregiver, will tell you how long you have to wait. And that's really in response to the way that you sort of extricated the pregnancy. So that might be 4 or 6 weeks. But after that, it's sort of business as usual. And it really becomes about what your level of comfort is and where you're at in terms of what you're looking, you know, how ready you are emotionally to get started again. And also, it will be different depending on the reasons why you have had miscarriages and how many miscarriages you've had. So it's really important that you sort of consult your professional when you're making this decision, but really they'll tell you something, and then also you'll do what you feel comfortable doing based on your emotional level of readiness.
Yoga Birth Babies is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, yogis, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/YBB to support the show and see if you qualify. All right, so now we kind of got the stats out. Let's go to the part that I know is juicy for you as a therapist, the emotional side. Yeah. So how do you even approach, how do you help a woman? So say you have or yourself, when someone's had a miscarriage and they come to you for support, where do you start?
Yeah, first of all, I love when they come to me for support. When somebody is dealing with miscarriage or infertility, it's really, they're so, so raw that they don't necessarily want to talk about it. And when someone comes to me for support, I'm like, you have done such a good deed for yourself. You know, this is such a great step towards self-care. So that's where I start. After that, it's, you know, sort of providing a space that's safe to talk about all the things that you feel. Many women who have miscarriage, one of the big things that they feel is anger. And well, there's a few kind of consistent feelings, but one is an anger and resentment towards other women who are pregnant. And that feeling in and of itself is a really hard feeling to hold on to for a person. To look at a pregnant person, a pregnant belly, and to feel, some people even describe feeling kind of aggressive towards it, wanting to hurt the person, not that they would ever do it, but actually having that impulse inside themselves, which makes them feel like such a horrible, evil person. So in addition to the feeling of sadness and now anger on top of that, then they're also judging themselves and feeling kind of different than they've ever felt before and feeling kind of bad about themselves. So I know that a thing that I remember very vividly was walking down the street on the Upper West Side, and being someone who has lived and worked on the Upper West Side for the last 15 years, or 17 years really, I know that lots of moms are on the Upper West Side. It's very hard to kind of walk down the street and not see a mom with a stroller walking down the street as well. And I remember sort of being very tuned into that, to all of the women out there who had strollers. But the memory I have very vividly was seeing a woman who had a double stroller and a pregnant belly and feeling like, oh my God, that's just so unfair. And kind of going really far in my head with that in a way that I had never done before. Like, that person is greedy. How could she, as if there was a limited number of babies out there for women to have. And I felt like she was sucking them all up, and it was such a rational thought. And it was such a thought that was so foreign to myself and to who I identified as a person, that in addition to feeling so sad about the fact that I wasn't pregnant, I also now was feeling like, oh my God, what's happened to me? What's happened to my thinking? What's happened to my emotional experiences? To answer your question about like how to support a woman who comes to me who has had loss, one is to sort of normalize their experience of that is something that you're not alone. You are not alone in that feeling. You're not alone in the feeling of that you might be having of being, that you're broken, that you're damaged.
So that's what I went with, because not only was I living on the Upper West Side, I work with pregnant women. That is my job. So, Right. And it being my second and having, I think my perspective on things were a little different. I got pregnant my first try with my son, and he was fine. I got pregnant right away on our second try. And so it didn't even occur to me, even though this was, I teach, that I could have a miscarriage. And so, especially with the second, you show earlier. And I was showing a little bit and I was talking about it. And then I had a miscarriage at 12 weeks. And I kind of had to backtrack. I was going back. And some of the moms that I was pregnant with my first time were actually there having their second. We're kind of on that same timetable. And I didn't go angry at them. I went to, what's wrong with me? What did I? And then I started to blame myself. Did I do something? Did I pick my son up in a way? Did I do something with my body? And I know that's like, logically, I know that that's not what happened. Like, I even in hindsight, I can look back, like, my doctor didn't want to take blood work at the first time because clearly the heart, he was skeptical. Now I can see it a little clearer, but I really went into this, what did I do? And so I was sad instead of being angry, but it was hard. It was really hard being in front of those women trying to be stable. Not breaking down.
No, of course. And I think that some women have both. I had both. So I felt both angry and, that anger, what I'm talking about really is jealousy. The difference between envy and jealousy is that envy really is like, I want what you have, but I also am okay with you having it. And jealousy is like, I want what you have and I want to take it from you. And that's a really hard feeling to manage and to sit with. And that's really, I think, you can get to when you've experienced loss, and maybe when you've experienced multiple loss, where you've stopped sort of wanting the for the other person, and you're really focused on how you want it for you. And so helping a person to process that is really important. And to your point, that broken, damaged feeling or guilt, broken slash damaged slash guilt, all of the above, is another feeling or feelings that are really hard to sit with and also very common, particularly when you're going through sort of a medical process. You know, for me, I went through such a medical process where I was seeing multiple doctors and they were saying, well, this is a problem and this is a problem. And, you know, and they were doing, you know, invasive procedures to help me and help my body to heal so that I could potentially carry a baby to term. And so, you know, as many times as someone would tell me that that's just the way what was happening to my body, I internalized that as my body was broken. You know, I was damaged. And so, yeah, I think the guilt that you're talking about also is that the experience of, well, not only do I want this, I mean, it's multifaceted, but not only do I want this, but my partner wants this too. And without me, my partner can't have this thing. And so in addition to, you know, what you're talking about of, did I do something wrong? Have I somehow caused this? There's also that added component of, how will I be able to give this thing to the person who I love the most, and to myself, you know, and feeling it's such a complicated experience.
So how would one find the confidence again to keep trying or to trust that their body's capable? I know it's common. I know I experienced, like, I needed to get past that 12 week, cause that's when I was cruising forward, and then all of a sudden 12 weeks, bang. And so for the second time, again, I had a pregnant chemical pregnancy, but then after that, I was just so nervous. Like that 12 week, like the big, oh my God, this is when it happened. I was terrified up to that point. So I don't think that's uncommon. So what's a way that a woman can start to find confidence that her body is able to have a full term pregnancy?
Yeah. So that what you're talking about is negative predictions, right? So in the face of anxiety, in the face of the unknown, we often try to control or manage the unknown by filling in the blanks. And sometimes we do that with like a positive, sunny outlook. And sometimes we, particularly when we're feeling badly or when we've already experienced something bad, we fill it in with a negative outcome. And that's what you're talking about. So what I do in my practice when I work with women is help them to understand that no one, that the factually, the one experience doesn't actually impact the next experience. So that these are separate entities. So I try to help women to understand that factually so that they can start with the self-talk when they're feeling overly anxious to calm themselves down, that this is a new experience and to look at it as a new experience. But also to give a person space to not be confident, to not know. Sometimes the hardest thing in life is to sit with the unknown, and how we deal with that is really by taking care of ourselves, by giving ourselves time and space to just be like, I don't know what's going to happen next, and I'm going to try to be okay with that. And the fact that I'm not okay with that is also okay, and I'm going to have some compassion for myself. Instead of that judgment, and instead of sitting in the spot of, if I think it's going to be bad, then I will be less, I will be in less pain once it is bad. That's not true. So that's something I work on with women a lot too in this situation, is to say being guarded doesn't actually, you know, thinking the worst doesn't actually make you feel better if the worst happens. What it does is prolong that feeling. So let's try to think about it like from a space of, I don't know, I don't have a crystal ball, I can't tell what's going to happen in the future, and I'm going to deal with whatever happens because I do, I can, and I'm strong, and I can do it. So it's like, you know, being understanding that you can't know, knowing that sometimes you have to take a leap of faith and try for something without the guarantee that it's going to work out, and take your time in getting ready and figuring out for yourself when that time is.
Were you able to take your own advice when you were pregnant and it was moving forward?
Well, so for me, Yes and no. My husband was super supportive, was super influential in this area, where he had hope. I don't know if I've used the word hope yet, but the word like hope. Hope is something that can often get lost in this. And he had hope. He felt like what had happened was really awful. And also we were doing the things that we needed to do to move to the next spot. And he was really hopeful that one day we would be parents. And also he started to think about that there are other ways to become parents. And while I didn't want to hear that and I couldn't really look at that, the fact that he sort of brought hope into our home helped me to feel a little bit of hope. Also, finding the support, finding, you know, the doctors who took me seriously, the people who said, you know, what you're dealing with is bad, and we're going to do things to help, really was helpful. And also just sort of knowing that I could try without really believing or without truly knowing what was going to happen next made me feel like, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try, because I'm no worse off than I am now, was sort of my mantra. It's like, if this happens again, really all that's happened is that I've experienced the same pain again.
So you brought up partners. I want to dive a little more into that. So partners, I'm guessing, experience the process differently. What are some ways to help a couple come together or open a conversation? Because I know the mother can sometimes feel isolated in her experience.
Yeah. So, and also mothers can often push their partners away, and sort of make it like, what happened to me this didn't happen to you. And partners don't really know what to do with that, because while it didn't happen to their body in the way that it happened to the woman's body, it did happen to them in that they also lost what they wanted. So starting from that spot of what we have, what do we have in common and what do we have different, and not trying to one up each other in that, but more sort of meet each other and have empathy for each other's experience of this. And knowing that your partner can be there to support you and you could be there to support your partner. Be curious about your partner's experience. Be curious. What is this like for you? What have you experienced? Tell me about what it means to be you in this moment. Don't assume you already know. Don't assume. The piece that I wrote that's on your website, I talked about that I had this belief that my husband was going to leave me. That was my fear. It was my fear that I wasn't going to be able to. It was part of the experience I had of feeling damaged and broken. That if I couldn't have a baby and he really wanted a baby, then he would find somebody who could give him that. Which, if you think, if you knew our relationship and our history, there was no logic there. It was completely an irrational thought. And I never said it to him. In all of the time that we dealt with this, I never said it to him. Not in an outright way. So I had this kind of fear. I had this mind read that I was, you know, I was believing something about him and that he was believing, and I never brought it up. So ask directly. Don't do what I did. You know, if you have a mind read about your partner, ask them directly. How are you feeling? What, you know, you can say, use these words. Sometimes I sit and I think that you think blank. Is that true? Do you actually think that? And see what they say. And then deal with it. If your mind read turns out to be correct, talk about, so why do you feel that way? Why are you thinking that? What can I do to help you? What can I do to assure you? Or if it's not, then you can kind of try to take in what they say, believe them, and move on. Help your partner to understand that hope is good And, you know, that was what, you know, my husband's hope actually really was comforting to me. But denial is not good. Denial that this is a problem or that this is something that you're feeling, that's a whole different story. That sort of denial is sort of pushing away something that is true. Where the hope is accepting the thing that's true and also believing that something new could be true too. So hope is good and denial is not.
That's perfect. That's actually, I think, really helpful. So when I was doing some research about this, I was thinking about the seven stages of loss. Is it similar for miscarriage or multiple miscarriages? Are there certain expected stages that a woman processes?
So let's just name the seven stages of loss so that everyone knows what they are. The first is shock and denial. The second is pain and guilt. The third is anger and bargaining. The fourth is depression, reflection, and loneliness. The fifth is an upward turn where you start to sort of move forward. The sixth is working it through. And the last one is acceptance and hope. So I've already sort of said a few of those words, right? And I think that... for the person who's experienced a physical loss, sometimes they don't reach the end. You know, they can get stuck in any one of those or feel multiples of them at the same time. You know, you and I both sort of said we felt shock, we felt pain and guilt, we felt anger. You know, I certainly have heard women talk about feeling lonely. Isolated was a word you used. What I'm saying is that my husband's hope, I sort of borrowed his hope, but I never really kind of had it myself. So I would say that I never kind of got to the 5, 6, and 7, and I sort of was stuck somewhere in the middle of 1, 2, 3, and 4 or a mix of those. And I think that that's probably pretty common, that it's hard to get to the last stage of there where you accept the fact that you had a miscarriage, that you had a loss, and hope for the best in the future until you have your next pregnancy, until you actually have the thing you're looking for. Because the difference between maybe a pregnancy loss and the loss of a person who is born who you love and you know is that you're still looking for the baby. You know, you haven't had the baby. And the anxiety that you were describing before of, will this ever happen for me? You know, for you, it was till you reached your end of your first trimester. For others, it's till they actually hold their baby in their arms. That anxiety sort of keeps you away from reaching that spot of hope, or reaching the spot of acceptance and moving to the next stage.
So I know a lot of people wait until 12 weeks to announce their pregnancy. As we've mentioned, the statistics are the highest for the first 12 weeks. Do you think it's helpful to withhold? And this is just a personal opinion. Or do you think it's helpful? Because then if it happens and you haven't told family and friends, then they're wondering what's going on with you. And then if you have told family and friends and it happens, then you have to explain.
Right.
Are not great. So what's your thought on that?
Right. Well, you know, I hope that we can somehow break down the stigma of miscarriage and also break down the other people, like the societal view that this happens, get over it. Because the fact that it happens frequently especially in the first trimester of your first pregnancy, doesn't mean it's not painful. So when people say things like, oh, you'll be, you know, that happened to my best friend, or that even, you know, that happened to me, but look, I have two healthy babies. That's not necessarily helpful. It might provide some hope at the end, but in the moment, it's like, well, I'm living this right now, right? So helping the people respond better to people who sort of say, this is what happened to me, will help the process. But in terms of your specific question, my rule that I typically tell women, and I just told someone last night who asked me this question, is tell the people who you would want to tell because they will be supportive to you if and when you have a miscarriage. So when you're deciding who you're going to tell if you're pregnant, it's like, you know, maybe you tell a person who you never have to see again, you know, the waiter at the restaurant who you're like, can you just make sure that I don't have, you know, the fish with the mercury, or make sure that the cheese is pasteurized, because you'll never see that person again. And it might feel good to actually share the fact that you're pregnant, right? But it might not feel so good to tell someone that you are friends with, but that you don't speak to all the time, so that you then have to call them and tell them this very intimate thing about yourself that you might not be ready to be sharing. So my rule is basically tell the people in your life who you will feel will give you the support you need if and when this happens to you. And also maybe some people that you never have to see again, because it might be fun, but don't tell the people sort of in the middle. And certainly there's no need to sort of tell people at work or to tell your boss. You know, that kind of opening those floodgates sort of do more harm than good. So, you know, figure out the people who you think will be there for you and who you want to be there for you, and tell those people.
That's perfect. That's a really great guideline.
But it's really personal. And if you don't want to tell anyone, then that's also okay. you know, but you, if you don't want to tell anyone, that's also okay. And you can keep it between you and your partner. And then you might feel like once you've had a miscarriage, if you have a miscarriage, and if you are listening to this because you've had a miscarriage, you know, try not to feel so much shame and guilt around it that you can't get the support you need. And as I said that, I realized that I didn't say before, when you asked me about what I would tell women, is that you also need to take care of yourself. You know, and there's some ways that you can do that. One is meditation, another is yoga, is so helpful. Not accepting the invitations to all the parties where there's going to be a lot of pregnant women and children, if that is making you feel anxious or if that's making you feel sad, talking to the people that you need to talk to, getting therapy if that helps, and finding some ways to find peace. You know, being quiet at times in your day to sort of allow yourself the space to just be okay with you, or be sad if that's what you need. Yeah.
And as you're mentioning yoga, there's actually, I know in New York City, and I'm assuming elsewhere, there's specific yoga for fertility, fertility yoga. There's different groups. I've had women actually who are trying to get pregnant want to come take class at prenatal yoga center thinking, I'll be with that great energy. And I've actually, tell me your thoughts on this. I've actually always said no. I don't think that's ideal, because if you're longing to get pregnant and you're having problems and you're taking the yoga for that pregnant energy, the last thing you want to do, and it's kind of what I mentioned in my own experience, is like, you don't want to surround yourself with the bellies if you're having a hard time, because it's just going to make you feel worse. Maybe I'm just going on from, you know, too much from my own experience, but I would suggest, you know, a like-minded group of other people that are working in that phase. What are your thoughts?
It's so interesting. I would never have thought that. And I've never heard someone say that to me about the pregnant energy, but you know, I don't know if that's what, I think that if they think it's going to feel good, then.
I think mentally they think it's going to feel good, but I think once they face it, it would be hard. That's just my own gut feeling.
I agree. I've yet to meet a person who has had a loss or infertility who feels better in the presence of pregnant people. I mean, that's just not the way that they experience it.
Yeah.
But you know, I guess if a person, you know, if in your shoes, if you let them come and sort of see, they probably will learn that for themselves. But I can see why you would tell them, I don't recommend that.
Yeah.
That's
so there's specific, if you've had a miscarriage and you want to. And I think yoga is so great. In fact, I've done a podcast with this Dr. Alice Domar. She has this huge fertility center in Boston. And part of her program is specifically yoga, because I think it's fantastic for fertility. So if you're listening, find a fertility yoga class, because it can be super helpful, mentally and physically.
And acupuncture.
Yes.
People also, respond really well to acupuncture.
Absolutely. Was there anything that we haven't covered on this big, important topic that you want to speak about before we close up?
I think that the thing that I don't know that I said that I feel like is really important is that sometimes in your work after you've experienced a loss, you're going to find that your experience is your own and might be different than another person, might be similar. And that's because everything that happens in your life happens within the context of your life. So it's important to sort of identify the things that maybe happened in your past that are bringing up the feelings that you're having about this particular experience right now. So why did I experience this belief that my husband was going to leave? You know, where did that come from? And in my exploration of it, I realized that that sort of comes from my life experiences, where it's my own personal trigger. And that was for me to sort of start to work out and work through. And, you know, the same for you, you know, and however you experienced it was you experienced it in the context of your life. So while you're not alone, and there's a lot of people in this world who can relate to you and identify and empathize with you, a lot of those pregnant bellies, they didn't start pregnant, and some of them have a similar story to you. So, you know, some of the people who have babies and who have and are pregnant might be able to relate to you, even though you might be pushing them away. But their own story will be their own story, just like your story will be your own story. So find people that you could talk to and both share the things that are the same and also respect the ways that your experience is different.
That's wonderful. That's a great note to end on. So if someone's listened to this and they're in the area and in the New York area and they resonate with what you're saying and the support you give, how can someone find you?
Yeah, I'm on the Upper West Side. I have a psychotherapy office on 80th and West End. You can find me there. You can also find me by going to my website, nycmomsupport.com. So it's nycmomsupport.com. And my contact information is on my website.
And if you are resonating with Michelle, she did two other podcasts. Let's see if I remember. Okay, I know one was Childproofing Your Marriage, because that's actually one of our most popular podcasts listened to.
Oh, wow.
I think because people get into pregnant, they get into marriage, and then they get into the baby, and they're like, whoa, they're very different. And the other one is postpartum depression. Wow, yeah. You and I really pull out the fun topics, don't we? It's a party here.
Yeah, next time can I come on and talk about something a little lighter?
I know. We don't go light and breezy. We go deep and dark.
We really don't. No, we really don't. But, you know, I think in my practice, I have a range of emotions. People who come for a range of topics, starting with trying to conceive and all that comes with it, to postpartum depression, and also things like potty training and breastfeeding and things that, and I have wonderful groups that I run that really are just about bonding. So the whole process is it's an emotional roller coaster, and you really kind of hit them all.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for joining me again. I'm sure I'll find yet another topic to have you come back on.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
And I really hope that my story and the story of other women who have experienced miscarriage can help others while they're going through it, and then particularly after they've gone through it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Have a great day. Talk later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.